Good. How are you holding?
Excellent, excellent. I have the easiest job here today. I don't have to look good or, you know, I'm not wearing any makeup.
I'm not in a designer outfit.
Not at all, no. I'm wearing Nikes. It's great. It's great.
Can you talk about what it feels like to see something you've created, like, come to life on screen?
I mean, this is a very unique experience for me because this is a book where I handed it to a bunch of filmmakers. This was, you know, the book that I wrote first, and this is the thing that sort of changed my life 7 years ago in a really crazy way. And you know, in the case of Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter, in the case of other stuff that I've written, and as a producer and a showrunner and now a director, I'm usually pretty involved. And so when we get to this point, I know what to expect, and, you know, I've seen it, and but last night was really the first time seeing it as a whole piece. I had seen bits and pieces of it, and I'd seen a rough cut and everything. And it's very exciting to just sort of be a fan, to get to experience something, someone else's interpretation of something that you did. And I loved it. I had a great time, and I kind of can't believe we're here, because, I mean, you know, it's not just the fits and starts of all the things that have been written about, you know, people coming to the movie, people dropping off the movie, but because that always happens. It's more of a fact that, like, I can't believe a movie like this actually got made in today's climate. You know, it's exciting. I mean, if nothing else, it's really exciting and feels very unique.
When you wrote the book first time, Pride and Prejudice is such a beloved novel. Was there any blowback from about what you did to it?
You know, it's so funny. I mean, I wrote the book and expected it to maybe sell 5,000 copies, you know, because that was, up to that point, I'd been writing nonfiction books, humor books, and I'd just written a book about, you know, horror movies, and they would typically sell around 5,000 copies, and so I didn't expect anything. I didn't expect any blowback or anything. And then when the book took off, I did have a moment of uh-oh, because, you know, I mean, I didn't really know anything at the time about the so-called Janeites, and I sort of thought, well, now they're going to come after me. But while a couple here and there do just sort of dismiss it out of hand as sacrilege, like, how dare you? You know, you might as well be dancing on Jane's grave and everything. To my relief, to my surprise, I've found over the years that Janeites are a tremendously humorous group of people. Like, it turns out that Jane Austen's a really funny writer, and it turns out that the people who love her books get that.
Yeah.
And so I would say 90% or more of the people who I encounter who are the self-professed Janeites or who love her books say, you know, you let me experience my favorite book in a new way, and what you didn't do was change any of the characterizations or any of the Prides or the Prejudices. You just took them and put them in an absurd context and preserved the characterizations, and I think they get that, and I think that hopefully they also understand that, you know, whenever I approach one of these ideas, whether it was Vampire Hunter or whether it was this, I try to take, even if it's a B-movie premise, right, and I'm talking about that in the book sense, I try to give it an A level of execution. I try to really do my research. I take time with these things. I try to get the language right. I try to get the characterizations right. I try to do honor to, you know, when I was writing Lincoln, the book, and I thought, well, you know, now I'm taking on the most beloved American president of all time. I better not screw this up. I better know what makes this guy tick. I better, you know, have done my homework, because people are now going to pay attention to this after PBZ. Mm. So I really took my time to do that. And that's been my habit ever since.
Well, I mean, did you love Pride and Prejudice? Like,
No, when I was 14 and I had to read it for English Lit, it turns out that high school freshman me didn't really care too much about, you know, whether Lizzie married the right guy or not. It was kind of an impenetrable book for me at 14. And then when this idea came around, I went back and read it, and the first thing I realized is, you know, at that time, I think I was, you know, 32, and I said, oh, I get it. She's really funny, right? She's making fun of these people, and right. There's a reason the book's called Pride. Oh, okay, I get it now. You know, it was like this this aha moment of not being an idiotic 14-year-old anymore. And then, yeah, it took me a while. It took me a while to come around. And then I read everything else. I mean, then I read Sense and Sensibility, and then I read Northanger Abbey, and I just, you know, and then I researched her life, and because I really wanted to, the fun of it and the scary thing about it was trying to get the language right, trying to make these passages invisible. And, you know, the most proud I can ever be is when someone says, you know, I didn't realize where your stuff starts and where her stuff ends. And sometimes it's when people are speaking dialogue, and that, you know, that was the challenge. That was the hardest thing, is to go and look at, well, how would she say that? You know, and the thing about people, especially aristocrats in the Regency era in England, is like, you know, they would never use two words when 500 would suffice. So you get to write these incredibly long-winded, you know, passages in which, as a writer, as you guys know, I mean, it's, you don't always get to do that. Usually when I'm a screenwriter, or, you know, usually if I'm writing a nonfiction book, it's all about economy of words. This is about how many words can you use to describe one thing or say one thing.
But then you throw zombies in it. Where did that come from?
It, you know what? It was just the idea of these. Here was the original humor in it for me. The thing that was the funniest to me throughout the book was the fact that these people, these Regency era English aristocrats, were so stuck up and so concerned with their pettiness and their, you know, that they would actually care about marrying up and about who wore the best dress and about who had the best hair when their country was falling apart around them. And that to me was the funniest. I mean, all I did was take these brilliant characterizations that Jane Austen had created and take, you know, this sort of these prides and these prejudices and turn them up to 11. That's really all it was. Instead of, you know, sparring with words, Darcy and Liz spar with swords. And, you know, there were fun things about, you know, the prejudices between training at Shaolin or training at Kyoto,
right.
Which, you know, I mean, who even knows? I just had a Japanese reporter ask me, you know, why, you know, and I didn't have a good answer for her, because I don't know that much about, you know, the fighting styles of Shaolin versus the fighting styles of Kyoto, if there is such a thing. To me, it was just funny that, you know, there was a destination that was for the ultra elite, and then a destination that was for the merely elite, right? And that these people were still fighting about who was richer, when you couldn't go from here to there without getting attacked by a horde of the undead. So, you know, the whole thing was ridiculous. And I knew just instinctively that if I did anything, it was, you cannot wink at the reader. Not ever. You cannot give away the joke. You have to approach this with dead earnestness, seriousness. And the thing that was the most gratifying about the movie and what Burr did is that they never flinch.
Right.
They never flinch. They this thing is cast like and is shot like, you know, BBC's masterpiece, you know, just an updated Pride and Prejudice. Oh, by the way, there's zombies in it. But then, you know,
and swords.
And yes, exactly, and swords and ninjas and all sorts of manner of weird things, but that's the fun of it for me, is, you know, I'm not sitting here, people say, oh, Pride and Prejudice and zombies, it's like Scary Movie, right? Or it's like a spoof where you're just, no. It's a period costume drama that happens to have moments of zombie attack in them. That's really it. So, you know, hopefully people will be interested in that. I mean, it's like you're coming to a zombie movie and we're sort of spoon-feeding you your medicine with the Jane Austen at the same time. Or even worse, you're coming to a Jane Austen movie and you're getting, you know, you're getting gobsmacked by some weird zombie thing that you weren't expecting. But that would be funny, actually.
Were you ever going to write it, the script?
No, I was never going to write the script, because the original, the way it originally came together was Natalie Portman optioned it for herself to star in when it first came out, and immediately David O. Russell came on to write it and direct it. And this was before he went on his run, you know, The Fighter, this was before The Fighter, and I mean, he was still David O. Russell, and it was very exciting. And so David wrote a version of the script, and, you know, I think Lionsgate, when given the choice between David O. Russell and 7 years ago me, or even today me, is not even close to it. I mean, you know, forget it. So they went with David. And then David came off, and Marty Noxon did a rewrite, Then there was, you know, several directors, and then Burr came on, and Burr sort of took some of the things that David had laid out and sort of made them his own and rewrote the draft. And so by the time it came back around, I had gone off and done other things, and so I spent the last 7 years just kind of watching as an interested observer as this movie went through its various shapes and finally came together.
When you, on the book, when you're credited, you and Jane Austen, did you have to get permission to do that? You can just credit yourself and another author.
Jane Austen's, yes, it's the books are her books are public domain. She has no estate. She has no heirs. I guess you can, in certain instances, credit yourself. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Here's a rumor question. Are you doing something involved with a Ray Bradbury book? Are you doing something wicked?
I'm producing and directing something wicked for Disney. We just got a... David Leslie Johnson just wrote a draft, and we're trying to, you know, put it all together. But yeah, that book was my favorite book as a kid. Ray Bradbury is my hero. I mean, that book was just it for me at 13 years old.
Yeah.
And you know, I remember being scared to death by the 83 movie. But you know, it's a movie that hasn't really remained in the popular culture. It's a movie that hasn't really aged that well. And so, you know, 13-year-old kids now have no idea what Something Wicked is. And so, you know, although there's a lot I like about the 83 movie, I think that making an updated one would bring the story to a lot of people.
Jonathan
Pryce and Jason Robards.
Right,
and, yeah.
Okay,
yeah. I mean, those two guys were great in the movie. It's just other things about it were just, you know, it's very, when it gets down to the effects and that stuff, it's very of a time. And
so this is happening, as far as you know?
Well, I mean, it's happening in so far as we have a script. I'm attached to direct it.
Okay.
It's at Disney. You know how it goes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Looking forward.
Very, very much so. Very,
right.
Yeah.
I just finished Last American Vampire.
Oh.
Very good.
Yeah.
What is your fascination with history like this and like in throwing these supernaturally things? Because Rasputin as vampire, I mean, that's...
It seems so obvious,
sense,
right? Makes total sense.
Yeah.
When you read about how the guy was killed or not killed, I mean... My fascination with it is just that I was always a history kid. I mean, I always have loved history. Most of the reading I do for myself, you know, are the Doris Kearns Goodwins and the David McCulloughs and the Walter Isaacsons of the world. I mean, I love biographies. I love real histories. To me, that's the most compelling stuff in the world. And what's great about it as a fiction writer is that it immediately provides drama, and it immediately provides an interesting context for whatever it is you're doing. And what I do, I even, you know, go so far as to outright steal people's lives, you know, and just and make you know, a very simple Illinois lawyer into a, you know, a vampire hunter, just because it, you know, strikes me as interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But then once I, you know, again, just to reiterate though, once I do sort of cross into that, like, into that territory, what I try to do is then make it as if David McCullough were writing this book about something that really happened. And that's where the fun of it is for me. It's in the research I have to do in putting together this, you know, this sort of sleight of hand trick in the form of a book.
And how someone like Henry Sturgis could be friends with Mark Twain, and you know, I mean, it's like it.
But there's a lot of precedent for that, though, because
yeah.
You know, I mean, because you know, in that book, I mean, it's so funny. You know, somebody, there's just a story that was trending about, hey, did you know that when they found Edgar Allan Poe, he was delirious and he had been poisoned and he was staggering through Baltimore.
In a gutter,
right?
Yeah.
And somebody on one of the message boards of the article wrote, you know, if you want to know how he really died, read Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. We do actually explain that. Like, so that's the fun of it to me is, you know, when I get letters from high school kids who say, like, I wrote a report based on your book and I failed my class. It's a grace. I'm so honored. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thank
Thanks
you.
A lot.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. Absolutely.
Thank you.